we certainly win when people understand what abortion is. We won't stop abortion until the public sees abortion. And that's our goal, certainly at Life Issues Institute, where we're dedicated to pro-life education.
Welcome to Straight Talk on Life Issues. I'm Victor Nieves, hosting today, as we have a very special guest, and that's none other than Brad Mattis himself. Brad is the president of Life Issues Institute, as you know, and this year marks Brad's 50th year of pro-life advocacy. So, Brad, thank you so much for joining the show.
Well, it's fun to be here. It's a milestone that I don't expect to reach again, and it's going to be fun talking about the history of the movement and think about some of the things that we've done.
Brad, I'm really excited about today's program. Let's start off by going all the way back to the very beginning. How did it all start for you? When did you first develop that interest in the pro-life movement?
Well, it began at age 18, my senior year in high school in Billings, Montana. I was part of a persuasive speech class, and our final assignment in May of 1975 was to produce a persuasive speech. We would poll the class before and afterward, and part of our grade, of course, would be determined by how we persuaded our own peers in that class. We paired off. My partner chose capital punishment, and I chose abortion. It was 2 years after Roe v. Wade, and I always thought that abortion was an absolute blight on American history. So I didn't know where to go. I went to Yellow Pages and looked under Right to Life. I found a phone number, called a delightful woman. Mary Rose answered the phone. She invited me to come over, and she equipped me with slides of fetal development and what abortion does to its tiny victims, and information on how it impacts the woman and other things. So these were all provided by a doctor and Mrs. Wilkie, whom I had no idea existed and had no idea we would be working together for 24 years. But before I presented the information, I took the poll. The class was about 50-50 on abortion. After I presented that information as I described, I took another poll, and it was unanimous for life. So I learned early on that pro-life education is really the foundation on which we build those important political and legislative victories. And immediately after that, teachers asked me to come back to the local high schools throughout the city and present information on abortion.
So that presentation really changed the whole direction of your life.
It did, yes. And as I worked in the movement, I was a volunteer for 11 years, and the more I worked toward advancing the pro-life cause, the more I wanted to do this as a full-time opportunity. And when that finally presented itself in 1986, I gave it a fairly long, serious consideration, said yes, and have not looked back.
Wow. What was it like whenever you and Dr. Wilkie first launched Life Issues Institute, took that big leap, and everything changed?
Well, I was working for National Right to Life's PAC, Political Action Committee. I was second in command with that. My territory was the Western 13 states, and it was very exhausting during an election cycle, I don't need to tell you. Jack began to be concerned that pro-life education was being put on the back burner in favor of other things. And we know, of course, that pro-life education is so very important to our movement. So he decided to start Life Issues Institute. He called me up one day and asked if I'd like to come and help him launch the organization. And I talked to my wife, and after about 20 minutes, I decided, yes. The only thing holding me back was the fact that I had him up on this pedestal as a hero of mine, and I was worried that as we worked together, the cracks on that facade would break and crumble. But in the 24 years that we worked side by side, he never once fell off that pedestal.
Mm. So through those 24 years, can you share with us some of the golden nuggets, some of the wisdom that you picked up from Dr. Wilkie?
Ah, yes. One of the first things we launched was never done before national polling to see how the public viewed the pro-life movement, and it was not pretty. So we took those results and we went to Washington, D.C., invited all the national pro-life Afro family groups. We wanted to have a unified response to an upcoming Supreme Court decision on abortion. And as a result of that came the phrase, love them both, which we took and saturated not only the United States, but the world. And Jack and Barbara always taught me that we have to change with the times to educate the masses. And if we're not there before them in relevant ways, then we are just whistling in the wind. And that is a remarkable thing that I have seen played out over and over with great success.
And the Love Them Both, that campaign that you mentioned, that's still used everywhere. That is synonymous with the pro-life movement. Everyone out there is still using the Love Them Both campaign.
It is, and it's made a comeback mostly with youth-led pro-life organizations. I remember one time I was speaking at a national pro-life conference in South Africa. And as they drove me to the venue in Durban, South Africa, on the street corners were these heart-shaped placards that says, love them both. So it really did circumvent the whole globe.
So Brad, one of the areas of the pro-life movement that you have truly a unique passion for is specifically helping men who have suffered from the impact of abortion. Tell us about that. And when did you first develop that passion?
Well, I remember two distinct communications that came into our office. One was an email from a young man who had experienced two abortions and was deeply, deeply grieving. And I recalled during my early years in about 81, maybe, the local pro-life chapter president, her son committed suicide due to an abortion, and he left a note that made it clear that that was the cause. And then what really pushed me over the edge, I guess, with this issue was that we got a handwritten letter that came into the office. I had been on an appointment. I came in and our receptionist was crying and I asked what was wrong. I thought something happened to Dr. Wilkie, and she just said, on your desk, is all she could say. And so there was this handwritten letter, several pages, talking from a brother's point of view, how his younger brother had experienced two abortions. And one morning when his mother went to the car to go to work, she found her son hanging from the rafters in the garage, which was a horrific, horrific experience for everybody involved. And by the time I laid that letter down on my desk, a passion had been ignited in my heart to help these men, to protect them and to get them healing. So I started doing research with Dr. Wilkie's blessing, and I found, I would say about 10 or 11 individuals who were already involved with this issue. But we were all little islands, so I worked with them to network together, and we formed the Men and Abortion Network called MAN, and we developed, you know, resources, a website, and our goal, of course, was to create awareness within our own movement that men hurt too. We were so delighted when we put out the alert, the pregnancy centers, Right to Life chapters, everyone totally embraced this message, and we moved forward to provide healing and peer-to-peer counseling within many, many, many of these pro-life pregnancy centers.
And on that note, obviously, we're doing a lot, and there are many in the movement that are working very hard to help those men. But what are some of the things that you think the entire pro-life movement at large and just individual pro-life activists, what could we do better to help reach those men?
Well, we have to let them know that there's help out there. A lot of them, Victor, are in pain and struggling day to day with a past abortion, but they have no idea what's the cause of their world crumbling around their ankles. So we need to get word out that the suffering of fathers after abortion is a real thing, and that they're not alone, and that there is hope and healing. And on our website, menandabortion.net, we provide a free peer-to-peer counselor so that they can remain anonymous if they want, give us their city location and an email. We research to find an experienced counselor for them and then provide them that information. And an important thing is they must take the first step to seek help.
You You're listening to Straight Talk on Life Issues. We're joined by Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute, highlighting his 50th anniversary, his golden anniversary, working in the pro-life movement. You can find resources at lifeissues.org. So, Brad, over the last 50 years, a lot has changed. You mentioned that you first came into the movement right on the heels of the initial Roe v. Wade decision. Obviously, we have Dobbs now. We're very grateful for that. We've had victories at the state level all across the country. What do you think about the victories that we've seen over the years?
Well, they certainly are hard fought. And when I got involved in the movement, a lot of my friends and even my own family gently said, you know, this is a done deal. The Supreme Court has ruled. Basically, in a nice way, they said, you're wasting your time. Don't try. Obviously, we ignored that advice. But one of the mistakes we made as a movement was to think that abortion is so horrific. All we have to do is show them the beauty of the unborn child and the carnage inflicted on those babies in the womb, and America would rise up in opposition to abortion. And sadly, that was not the case. One of the big victories was when Nancy Jo Mann, who had been seriously butchered by a legal abortionist, came forward to talk about that, but not only that, but about the anguish that women feel after abortion. That was a big deal. And then women came out of hiding and more were there. And of course, a system was developed to provide counseling for them and healing. And now, in many areas of the movement that is led by women who have experienced abortion, we had victories of getting pro-life presidents elected and getting members elected to the U.S. Supreme Court. But then, you know, we also had some serious defeats where so-called pro-life members of the Supreme Court turned on the babies once they got there. But it was very much a methodical, unified effort to educate the public and on that foundation then build political and legislative victories on both the state level and the national level. Our focus, of course, was on Congress because that's where we elect and pass federal legislation, and also we can impact through the Senate and the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, it may be in part my youthful optimism, but I'm a big believer that we have to maintain the belief that God plus one is a majority. Do you think it was important to the success of the movement to maintain that optimism, the belief that you have to have as you're trying to fight for life, the belief that it can be done, we can win, we can protect these babies? Do you think that that attitude was important in achieving these victories?
No, I don't think it was important. I think it was essential. And we had to rely on the creator of life. Our argument to the public was that this is a civil rights issue. It should be based on medical and scientific information. But we certainly embrace the aspect that we get our strength and provision and victories from the Lord above, of course.
Amen. And going forward, we've seen a bit of a cultural shift in the last 5-10 years where there's a lot more independent media. We have social media, we have platforms that are trying a little bit to move back toward free speech and a little bit more open journalism, a little bit less of the legacy media control. Do you think that having an opening of some of the free speech avenues, do you think that that'll be very advantageous for us going forward?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's kind of a no-brainer. We certainly When people understand what abortion is, we won't stop abortion until the public sees abortion. And that's our goal, certainly at Life Issues Institute, where we're dedicated to pro-life education. But that fuels every victory on every level. And we're seeing it right now with chemical abortion, where the advocates of that want to hide the impact that it's having on women and men. And I just read an article, Victor, where a couple used the abortion pill to abort their baby at 17 weeks and then were absolutely shell-shocked to see a baby delivered as a result when they were told it wasn't a child. So, yes, the lies of the media and the advocates of death can be exposed the more we can get media outlets that really talk about the truth of abortion and what's involved.
Well, I look forward to that a lot going forward. I agree. I think it's going to have a massive, massive impact on how we can save the babies, getting that information in front of people. Here's a follow-up question. You've seen a lot, obviously, the developments legally, culturally, etc., over the last 50 years. What are some of the things that stood out and surprised you?
Well, the strength of the pro-life position of America's youth was a pleasant surprise. I remember the president of the National Organization of Women, radical pro-abortion group headquartered in D.C. The president was taking the subway, the underground, to her office, and it was the day of the March for Life. And she was shell-shocked at how many youth were on those trains. And then on the platform, and then up on the ground. And she was quoted as saying to her staff, "There's so many of them, and they're so young." And within months, she had retired as president. But, the youth influx to a movement was something that is really wonderful. When I started going to the March for Life in DC, probably in 77 or so, I was a distinct minority as a young person at that march. And now, when I go, I'm again a distinct minority because easily 2/3 are 25 and younger. And they're bringing with them enthusiasm, savvy, courage, a knowledge and use of technology. It has been such a wonderful evolution to see that.
What's one thing, Brad, if you could see the entire pro-life movement come together to accomplish one specific goal, what would it be?
I think our best bet is to come together with a unified message. And we're all saying the same thing. And it worked so well when we did the Love Them Both. I think we get along wonderfully as a movement. I remember the dreadful 80s when we were at each other's throats. But I think we need to come together with a concise message and a way to implement that message. And to magnify that message to millions of people. I think that would be a step forward if we could accomplish that as a movement.
So, throughout your time in the movement, what are some stories specifically that have impacted your walk as a Christian?
I think when I see the evidence of prayer answered, the evidence of God granting success to somebody who really stepped out in faith. And we see that play out certainly with 40 Days for Life, where we have a prayerful presence outside of pregnancy centers. I have to admit and come clean that when that started, I thought, well, that's a nice little effort. It'll make them feel good, but it probably won't do anything. Well, it does. It's had a huge impact on abortion facility staff resigning. And women choosing life for their babies, seeing the prayerful presence outside an abortion facility, and then hearing from abortion workers what an impact that had really demonstrated to me that we need to embrace and more fully lean on and practice our faith of prayer and stepping out in faith.
Well, prayer works. It really does. And it's a beautiful thing to see when that happens. What advice do you have for the next generation of pro-life advocates?
Well, the advice I have is not to give up. There are going to be discouraging times. Take a day or two and lick your wounds, pray for support and strength, and then jump right back into the fray because there will be many defeats, as there will be many victories. And when we started under Roe, every state was fully pro-abortion and allowed abortion up to birth. And now we have the opportunity to fight for those babies in various states. Here in Florida, where I live, we just learned that 12,000 babies have been spared as a result of the heartbeat bill that's passed here. That's enough to populate a small Florida town. And we have to continue. We look at the abolitionists. And they often gave us strength because we looked to them to see how it was a decades-long battle. But imagine what America would look like today if they had given up. And giving up was not an option for them. It cannot be an option for us. So everybody needs to stick with it. Look at what has been done in the past and how continued efforts and prayer and working has got us where we are today. We have a long way to go, obviously, and we can do that if we follow those principles. But I'm looking forward to the years ahead and how things will be done differently and how the movement will expand and grow and evolve to reach more and more hearts and minds.
Speaking of that, Brad, looking forward, what direction do you see the pro-life movement going? What are some of the obstacles that may show up? And also, what are some of those victories that you expect we're going to have in the future?
Well, I think the biggest challenge and most urgent challenge before us are chemical abortion pills. They're being mailed into pro-life states that have laws protecting their unborn children. They are flaunting the laws. We have a governor in New York who is harboring a drug dealer who is sending those pills illegally into states. We have to figure out and come to terms with how to stop that. And that largely will involve having courage on the part of politicians to defend those babies and to pass laws against those drugs. And when we can curtail chemical abortion, we are going to see millions of babies saved. I think we will be victorious in battling chemical abortion because it is such a ghastly drug that inflicts a great deal of harm on both the mother and father. And as those who have been lied to and used it speak out, we are going to see a public sentiment change on that. I think we're also going to see more and more states successfully defend their unborn babies. Missouri is an example of that. The state legislature is battling deceitful, a referendum that was passed in the state hiding the true nature of abortion until birth. And we, I think, are going to be successful in turning that back. And I think then that will give incentive to other states to do the same where that tragic result came to pass.
Speaking of those referendums, that's one of the things that we've seen the abortion industry have a bit of success with. They're able to pour tens of millions of dollars into these dishonest campaigns where they'll swindle the voters of these states, or at least they'll try to. We have defeated them, as you know, in Florida. But at times they have been successful with these multi-million dollar deceitful campaigns. What are some of the things that you think we can do to curb their ability to lie to the public like that?
Yeah, and they win when they hide from the people the reality of abortion and what it does to the babies and the mothers and fathers. And we need to educate Americans to this reality. That's the only way we're going to defeat that. And I think we have a great promising tool, and that's social media, where we can reach the masses fairly inexpensively and quickly on matters that such as this, with the referendum that, you know, allows abortion till birth, to wake up the people. But we also have to motivate the churches. Many churches are pro-life and speak up, but more do not. And we have to turn that around. We have to educate pastors that abortion is a ministry for their church, both in protecting life and to offer hope and healing to mothers and fathers who are wounded from having chosen abortion.
You know, Brad, I couldn't agree more, and I think that if we were to see the church really turn things around and expose abortion for what it is, speak about this issue, and mobilize, we would see a change that would be so incredible for this country, for the women, and especially for the babies. Brad, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a walk down memory lane.
I know that this conversation has been a blessing to me. I'm sure it's been a blessing to you, our listener, to hear about the last 50 years of the movement, the victories, the defeats, the ups, the downs, and then where we can expect to go in the future. I think the future is very bright, as Brad mentioned to us. I also want to point you, our listener, to our website, lifeissues.org. There you'll learn more about what we've been doing over the last decades of fighting for life. You'll also see some of Brad's, what I'm calling Brad's greatest hits, some of the things that he's done over the years that you can go and see, and what Life Issues Institute has been doing as well. You can find that once again at lifeissues.org. Be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.